This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, welcome to another Carmcast episode repurposed from our live stream. If you want to check out the video, head to my Carm Capriotto YouTube channel, subscribe to it, and stay up to date with all the live broadcasts. This Carmcast featured in Anything Goes format with a power panel. No question Brian Kelly and Greg Buckley would make for a great power panel. What better way to start off 2022 than with some comprehensive discussions marking trends like multi-shop ownership? We also hit some great wisdom on developing trust, delegation, EVs, work-life balance, and more. No doubt you'll pick up a gem or two to help make your 2022 a banner year for you. Let me ask you, how do you recharge? Well, I asked my panel. Now compare your rechargeability to theirs. Hey, thanks for listening to the podcast where your learning curve never sounded so good. Hey, good afternoon, everyone. It's Carm Capriotto. Something new, something different. Of course, we can't start out the new year without having a power panel discussion. Can I remind everyone that, you know, we are the service aftermarket's best kept secret to personal networking. That's why people tune in to all the shows, be it Remarkable Results, be it Aftermarket Weekly, Town Hall Academy, or what we're doing here with a Carmcast. Excited to have you all here. And I just want to introduce my guests. I had two people that everyone knows, but I only have one of them with me right now. And I'm sure my other, which is Brian Kelly, will join us in a few minutes. He may have some technical difficulties, but that's how stuff happens. Hello, Mr. Buckley.
Hey, Carm. How are you?
Good to have you here, my friend. Greg and Brian are going to discuss stuff today, a power panel stuff. We kind of have an agenda, but we really don't have an agenda. As a new year happens, I don't know about you, I do believe I know about you. You put a lot of think into your business, into the industry, into the marketplace. Where are we heading? How are we getting there? What do I got to do? Is there a new lever to pull? Hello, Ed. Yesterday, I had Travis Troy from Des Moines, Honest Wrenches, great new play shop we had a tour of yesterday. And his little banter with me was the word of the year. And I thought it was just so damn cool. So I want to ask you, Greg, do you have a word of the year?
It's hard to pick one, but I guess if I had to go with perseverance.
Ah.
When you invited me to the show to talk about the new year, I had to really go back and go, wow, because I'm in the mindset, like a lot of us, you come towards the end of the year. And for some of us, like myself, the holidays can actually seem like interference. And not, you know, it's like, okay, the end of the year, numbers are there. I want to do better. I want to get things out of the way. And I want that new year to start because, man, I'm building up all this energy and I want to hit the ground running come January 1st. And, you know, I've got all this positivity coming out, programs I want to introduce and all that. And I think as small business owners, we all tend to gear up for the new year. And so when you say, okay, well, talk about last year. What did we do? I had to just like take it down a couple notches and go, okay, well, what really did happen last year? What went on, you know, and how is it making me move to 22 or the next year? I think perseverance was the mantra for a lot of us from the beginning of 2020 with the advent of COVID coming on and then the effects it brought. A lot of us had to, you know, maneuver.
You know, here you're saying, I got to persevere. My God, I thought we did that really successfully in 21 and now in 22 with all these COVID cases going on. And I guess it may be appropriate to ask you, what did we learn from COVID? What are we going to continue to do? But you know what? There are 1,000 different answers today. I mean, just watch the news.
Well, there are. There are so many examples that teach us, all right, we're going to get through it, number one. Number two, we are going to change. And that's what it's all about. And, you know, it's a normal course of action. When you think of a pendulum, how far, not just, and I'm not going to politicize anything, but just how far in one direction did we go? And now we're going to come back to the next one. Put all that together, plus you add in the COVID situation, and then the change of business models that we're all experiencing, or we have to reinvent. But we certainly are changing the way we do business. You put all that together in an 18 months time span, whew, did we really have to really be on our game? More than thinking on our feet, I think we were thinking not on our feet, but when we're going to sleep, when we wake up, when we, well, no matter, we're constantly thinking, because this tsunami of economic situations just had made us change.
I hear you. Thank you for that. Perseverance. It's another great word. Execute was Travis's from yesterday. Yours is perseverance. And if Brian does have a chance to join us, we'll ask him what his is. But Greg, trends that are going on in our industry, every time I talk to a friend that I know in the industry, hey, how's it going? What's going on with you? How many stores are you up to? Have you thought? There is such a trend for second store, third store, multi-store operations. Do you see what I see?
Well, yeah, I think a lot of really smart operators are able to take advantage of the marketplace. And they may be saturated or maxed out at their primary location, and they see an opportunity to extend that to another, you know, whether it's a geographical area, right? Could be right down the street, across the town, you know, another opportunity to grow. A lot of smart operators are going to. That's one model to take it. The other model is, and I go back to my biggest, I would say, influencer is the Mike Brewster model, where you just make incredible revenue out of one building because you can. But MSOs are definitely the, you know, the talk of the day. Your good operators are opening up 2, 3, 4, 5 locations, maybe at once, a couple at once, but they are growing. And that's a healthy sign. I mean, I think that, you know, we all know about it, what attrition does. We know that any kind of new technology that comes in, or any kind of, you know, large economic situation, will do to, you know, your older people who are on the verge of getting out to begin with. So
is that anywhere in the Buckley strategic plan?
Yeah, we are. I mean, I'm not afraid to say that. We're working really hard to get our roots situated. You know, we've got the, you know, my son, the son-in-law, who are grooming for thirds, but we have to make sure that we're rock solid in our first location. We look at it about another year, and then we'll probably be ready. But first, you know, the big house gets built first.
Unbelievable family business, 1966, started by your dad. His name is Gene. Gene.
Yep, Mean Gene.
Mean Gene.
The dancing machine.
Well, what happened to you?
Hey, what can I say? I'm the video guy. He's the dancer. I'm the video guy.
That's exactly right. And still a great family business with obviously thoughts about MSOs. You got to be, totally financially sound, Greg, in order to make that move. Or do you have great financials and you go to your bank and says, hey, listen, help me here.
Our family, and maybe a lot of people don't know this, at one time we had 4 locations. And this was back in the gas station, service station heydays. But to be honest with everybody, you know, those properties and businesses that we acquired, we weren't really ready as a family, as a business family, to take advantage of those. And, you know, some were temporary. Some we kept longer than others. But by the time it all said and done, we were back to our initial location, back at the 3-bay. You know, came up to where we're at right now. So we're not unaccustomed to it. It's just that the first time around, we didn't do it. I don't think we did it the right way. And we had properties, we had all that. So if we go back to it again, I'm not going to repeat what happened the last time. We want to make sure that we have the staffing. My plan is to groom who I have with me now and make sure that each person is strong enough to, you know, run an operation. And then we can go from there.
That's smart. I mean, back in the day when, you had the Taj Mahal gas facilities, you couldn't compete with them. So you had to make a decision. What are we really going to be? Greg, the whole MSO thing, the opportunities are there. And that is because the number of shop owners that are in their twilight, they have a going business. They have a location. It may not be the absolute tip top as far as the penetration of the market. I'll bet you in Delaware, there's 20 operations that could be available or more.
Oh, I'm sure. And there's a couple of good friend of mine has just acquired two really good locations. And I wish him the best of luck with it. And he was ready for it. He groomed his business to start with one, then two, and now he's going to launch two more. And that's great. And that's a pattern to go with. There's a lot of incredibly smart operators, you know, amongst us. And you just glean a little bit of information off of that. And that, for me, it gives me an incentive to go that route as long as I'm comfortable with it. And again, my family is comfortable with it as well, because, you know, it's not going to be my game in the long run. It's going to be theirs. And if they're ready for it.
When you get ready to make these moves, you're going to know if the family or your team, your leadership team is ready, because you just don't grow for the sake of growth without a plan. And anyone's plan is the team has got to be solid. You know, of course, your financials have to be solid. Your processes, your systems have to be solid. But if your people aren't solid, the people is what really drives it. Brian, I am sorry. I guess we may have had a goof up on the timing of this. But thank you for rushing to get on with us.
Yeah, no worries. That threw the schedule off just a hair, but all is well.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. So I really want to do what I planned to do in the early part of the show, is saying I have Greg from the East and Brian from the West, polar opposites on each coast. And I'm so happy to have Brian Kelly here from Valley Auto Electric in Covington, Washington. Again, like Greg, a great contributor to the podcast and a family business just like Greg. And Brian, you only have one store, right?
One store, yes.
And that's why I have Greg and you on both together. I didn't want to have a big five-store operation in a single store, because the perspective and the opportunities for the new year for single operators, there's more single operators than there are MSOs. And I think how you guys are thinking of business and life and what's going on around you, Brian, you are so, so big in developing people. And again, this is a power panel. Anything goes. The dialogue is open. He's thinking of possibly, you know, in his strategic plan, and I didn't look at it. I don't know if that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years out. It doesn't matter. But he's got to have his people ready, Brian. Would you agree that that's the number one?
Oh, without a doubt. I think anytime you talk about systemization, and one of the comments I always make when I talk about business is, you can have really poor systems with great people, but even the greatest systems will struggle with the wrong people. And the wrong people become the right people when you give them leadership, when you teach them, and you really invest in them. And that's always been my push, is to invest in the people as much as I can to bring them along and really create leaders out of them, so that they, you know, and ultimately, I think one of the things I've been asked over time is, why do the people who work for you seem to care so much? And the reason is, they care so much because it's them. You know, they all own a piece of it. And that's where you want your business to be.
We need to have the secret. We really need the secret. I use the word struggling a lot on the shows, because my quest is to grab that person who's struggling. Sit down, listen, learn, join, network, do something to get up and over your struggle. But a lot of it is the baggage of the fear of the unknown. And if someone is listening and they're saying, right on, Brian, right on, what's the first thing, Brian, that I need to do to assess, to evaluate, to prop up my people?
The first thing you always have to do is trust them. And it starts, the very, very baseline is trust. And until you trust the people that work for you and you trust yourself to trust them, nothing will happen. And I see this happen. I mean, I don't know how many shop owners I talk to in a year. You know, with the NWACA, we are constantly in communication with one another. And the biggest pet peeve I have is when I hear somebody make a comment about their employees, and they might call them knuckleheads. They might say how they can't do things correctly, but yet you hired them. You brought them into your team. For whatever reason, you don't want to trust them to do the job that you hired them for. As long as that mentality stays in your business, you'll never grow. And you as the owner will be stuck doing whatever it is that you hired those people to do.
So goes the struggle.
Yeah. If there's anything where I see the struggle at the very baseline, that's the first thing. And for some reason, we've all bought into this lie that nobody can do it as well as we can. And I am not a believer in that, you know, and granted, there are things that we're going to do better as owners, A, because it's our business, because we've been involved in it forever and we care more than anybody else, no doubt about it. But they're going to do it better than you if you turn it over to them. And I've seen many owners run circles in their own, just spinning around, and they do 100 things and they don't do any of them well.
Greg, what are you going to delegate then? What's the next thing you're going to delegate?
Decisions. On vendor relations, shop equipment, shop management. This next year is another level that my two guys will be tasked with. And Brian, you make a great point, because if there was anything to take away from 21 and this process of, you know, third generation and succession and all that, it is trust. That was the biggest thing for me, and maybe guys like yourself who we do have a family business and we want to be able to make sure that it succeeds when we're not there, because it's our life, it's our assets, it's, you know, everything like that. The example for me this year was just really letting the guys take over without me being there. I've explained to others in other groups that my ability to travel this year, and I certainly have done, Patty and I have done our fair share, and I've had a wonderful year of just, you know, enjoying life itself. But I had to let everything go and trust the two boys, you know, and my team for making that happen. One of the things that we did, and this was really something, because this happened just last week, you know, at the turn of the year, before I went and did the first year morning huddle on Monday, I took the numbers and I broke it down. I broke the whole year out, looked at our highs and lows and where they happened. And it's on a spreadsheet, performance report. So at the beginning of the year, February through mid-March or so or whatever, we had COVID attack, right? And COVID hit and, you know, it diminished the results. Come back April through, I don't know, October, very strong. But then we had July, August, September, where we hit record numbers with two guys, my nephew and my son-in-law. And I didn't recognize that at the first, when I first analyzed the numbers. And then we had December, which took a crap, basically, because we had basically two techs, one of them being me. So that's like 1.5. And we still came out with a record. And when I looked at all that, Monday morning, January 3rd, when we opened the doors, I had my yearly morning huddle. That was the screenshot I presented to them. And I told them, I said, this tells me more about you guys than it does anything else. And it was the passion that they had and the consideration of making record months. When I wasn't there, they were down to two guys. They really hit it hard. And that changed my whole like morning huddle speech for the opening of the year. You know, you come in and you're full of piss and vinegar and you want to get things moving. That was brought to my attention. And I completely changed it. So the trust factor is critical when you want to build an organization. You have to trust the people. You have to let it go. And for older guys like us, it could be a struggle. You don't do it like I do and blah, 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 and all that other stuff. But when you turn around and you look at everything, yeah, you know what? They do it like we do. And they can do it better than we can do. So fascinating events, and in retrospect, what a year.
When you know you're ready to delegate something and you want it, for example, Greg, you just said, listen, I got to let the guys make decisions on a few things, and especially, you know, any equipment needs that we may have this year. So, Greg, all these years in business, you're smart, you have common sense, your intuition, you listen, you learn, you read, you're engaged, you're networked. And you hear what people are buying. Now, do you sit on that information and hope that the boys are going to do their own level of research and then you got to sit back and wait? Or do you just kind of push the cart forward a little bit?
For me, I distribute every kind of information pertaining to what's coming down the road next, what to prepare for, the micro and macroeconomic situations in our areas and have them prepare so that they're on top of everything from what the financial expectations are of the company to what the financial situation may be of a client. You know, I think it's important to keep everything up. And then in terms of new technology, yeah, that's a constant conversation. That's every day.
So whatever you learn, you're still saying, hey, guys, I just heard this for what it's worth. Boom. And it's a deposit somewhere in for the guys, right? But you're not going to tell them, hey, I think we should buy this, because you really want to sit back and find out if they can formulate a decision with that information.
Yeah, I want them to experience it. Now, okay, let me just give a couple of cases and points, right? We started using Slack for internal communications. That's been really great because I can fire off a note, a memo, a podcast, anything to the whole team, and they can listen to it or not listen to it. At least getting it out to them. And if I ever reference it in a casual conversation walking through the bay, hey, did you hear that podcast the other day? Did you see that article? Fantastic. And then in terms of tooling and equipment, I told them that I was going to go out and purchase this little handheld tire from Altel, a tire inspection tool. I can't even think of the name of it. But anyway, does a great job. Laser beam, boom, instant, hit the button, measures tires, all that. So it wasn't getting much traction. So over the period of the December, I really started working this and developed a process for it, showed how to use it just for a quick check. Well, you know, I think we turned about $10,000 over this tool in terms of tires and brakes, so forth. So to this week, just before we got on the air, I went and I showed each of the techs how I'm using it. And my son-in-law, one of the techs, started grabbing, goes, you know what? I like this tool. I like this tool. So little by little, maybe a hunch that you might have, and you throw it out there, you know, it's like throwing it to the universe. It's going to, you know, come back in some way. Anyway, getting that out there, all of a sudden now they're going, oh man, this is pretty cool. This is really good. I like how this shows, you know, your tire condition, brake condition, all the little handheld. Now they're like, well, can I get one? Can I get one? So I hope that makes sense. But that's the little things that I think when you want to grow and you want to communicate and you want to keep things active and you want to just keep them up to date on a lot of stuff, it's a constant conversation. So you need to do that.
I don't really play gatekeeper. I come to them and I ask them. I'll say, hey, how's it going? What do you need? Where are we going? And in doing it, I always tie it back to where our goals are. You know, what have we preset? And again, you know, for years I used to go in and I'd give everybody the goals that we had. We always struggled getting there. And I really changed that philosophy to become a team engagement. Okay, here's where I see us. What do you think? Mm-hmm. Or where do you guys think we can go? And then once we built that platform, I kind of kick back. I maintain the plan, but I'm constantly asking, hey, what do you need? How can I help? What do you see that we don't have that we need? And how do we get there? You're able to use the group think. You're able to use everybody's opinion, everybody's thought, and make good decisions that way. A lot of times it'll come down to, okay, what do we have dollar-wise to put out there? What do you recommend? Oh, it's more than we expected. Okay, let's see what we got to do. So maybe we cut over here, we make this work. But I really, really try and push it back to the team because in all honesty, I don't have time to keep up with everything from the, I don't care if it's the point of sale side to the technology side in the back to God knows what's going to change on the marketing side. There's no way I can stay that deep in every one of those categories and do the other things that I try to do, whether it's association level stuff, whether it's community stuff, to try and do and balance that. There's no way. So I've found that I leave the entirety of it in my people. They bring it back to me and then we work through it. That's worked well.
So, Brian, a quick question about you were the chairman of ASA Northwest and now you're with the Auto Care Alliance?
Yes, Northwest Auto Care Alliance.
Congrats to this big move. And are you still kind of the lead guy out there like you were?
For Northwest, yes. I'm still lead for Northwest, and I'll be in this position for another 4 months. So it'll be, it's always a good place to be. It's been a wild ride for the last 2 years when you talk about taking in COVID and the transition and those who know Jeff Lovell, you know, he went down with a pretty nasty pretty nasty scare in the hospital. So that'll happen here toward the end of the last year. So it's been a year to be chair, I will tell you that.
I'm sure you carried it wonderfully. Now, let me make an assumption based on what I see behind you. Are you at home?
I'm in my home office, yes.
There's the key. I'm in my home office, and Greg's in his home office. So running a business, if you're not there, guys, let's talk about that. Brian, what's the secret?
It really moves into what kind of plan do you have? And by plan, what is your overarching plan for the company? But what is your plan for each individual? And then how are you executing that plan? And how do you have them executing internally? The real piece of it comes down to communication. And how is that communication being taken care of? Because, you know, in my case, I live 4 hours away. So communication is absolutely critical. And you have to know there's good internal communication. And like I said in the very beginning, there's that trust piece, right? So first off, you trust them to make decisions. You trust them to make that communication. But like anything in life, you still have to check. And I think that's the biggest piece with communication, internal and external as well. But we make the communication and then we ask. Okay, so I've asked to have this completed. Now what did I ask for? And you're constantly verifying and you're making sure your communication is clear. And that way there's no confusion. To me, the biggest problem in business is I've told you to go take that thingamabobber and go run it across the street. Well, your definition of what that thingamabobber is completely different than mine. I'll think of my daughter for this one because we took the Christmas tree, we cut it in half. It was too big to get out the door and I just didn't want to make any bigger mess than I had to. Well, I said to her, I left half the lights on the upper part of the tree so I could undo it out there. And I cut it and I said, just throw it out, you know, throw it out the back door. Well, there's an area I've shoveled that it'll sit on really nicely. She took me literally and she took the thing and heaved it into the yard. So now I've got to unwind lights off a Christmas tree that is just completely covered in snow. And I thought about it. And I went, she did exactly what I asked her to do. How many times do we do that in business? We say what we want and then somebody does it, I mean, to the T, and we can't figure out why they did it that way. You know, and she looked at me and she saw me undoing them and she goes, oh, Dad, you didn't want me to throw it that far, did you? And, you know, it just boom, clicked for me. And that's, you know, so often that communication piece where if I'd taken 2 seconds and said, hey, what did you hear from me? She would have looked at me and said, I heard you throw it out there. I was like, oh, no. Just throw it to the very side on the dry concrete.
So internal, external communications for you is like a crowning jewel of being able to lead a great organization, but be able to work even, you know, Greg may be 20 minutes away. You're 4 hours away. Andy Bizzub is Dallas, Chicago. And of course, he finds time to, I think, get up there for a week, every 3 weeks, once a month. And you're all running incredibly successful businesses with different kind of leadership models. And I think what you just said, I got to do better because of late, Ann and I say this, she hears what she heard, maybe because of my lack of clarity or that I'm using my vernacular and describing what that is, and she has no clue. And I'm finding that, you know, the things that we assume each other heard from each other, we have to do better.
I think the other thing, too, is sometimes we forget that we're looking through a certain prism color. You know, it could be we're looking through blue glasses and our employees are wearing red glasses. So everything we say comes out differently than what they expect. You know, and I see Nathan, the greatest teachers are great. They're great listeners. And that's the critical piece is you have to listen to them as much as you have to talk. And I'd almost say it's a 2-to-1. You have to hear 2 times as much as you ever give out. When it comes to communication, it's ask, ask, ask. So often as owners, what do? We tell, tell, tell. And the more we tell, I think the more things get screwed up.
You know, what I try to do, and I'm not sure if it's a good trait or not, but I'll never forget reading the book, The Present, and it was really all about being present. If someone asks you something, you almost have to find that switch inside of you, no matter what your mind was doing, no matter what you were listening to, no matter what you were watching, no matter what you were writing, you have to find that double pull, double throw switch and be present in the discussion. If those discussion points aren't the most critical thing that could have ever happened at that time, every once in a while, I turn it off because I got to go right back to what I was doing. weakness or strength or whatever. Guys, I think this is a great thing to talk about for a few minutes. You know, good listening skills, being present, interpreting the communications, both internal and external. Greg?
Brian hit it on the head. I mean, to be a good listener is very important. You know, I constantly talk and ask questions and all that stuff. But yeah, I do a lot. I do a hell of a lot of listening to the guys, to the team. And I'm kind of spoiled. And sometimes I think, well, maybe I should live further away. Like to, for me, 4 hours away is like, man, that's another state, you know, for me. You know,
well, you live in Delaware. Yeah. Anything is.
I mean, I would be in Virginia. Yeah. So, I mean, I can't imagine running a place from. I mean, I could with technology today. You know, you could do it. But this is such a great perspective because I don't want to say lazy that I can get, but there is certainly a huge comfort in having every team member. And there's not one team member that lives less than 5 miles away. Well, the new tech may, he lives maybe 10 miles away, but we're all so close to the shop. We're all so active and talking to one another inside and out. It's hard for me to create that formal, you know, channel, like maybe Brian that you have, only because you're so distanced. And in Andy's case, he's, you know, crap, he's half, I don't know, 1,000 miles away. It's still something that you should have in place, no matter your walking distance to the shop or you're 1,000 miles away. So that's something that I personally have to work on. And, you know, hopefully it will get to that point that I can create those rules and those channels, formal channels, and still have little sidebars and still do that. But that's something I definitely have to work on.
Greg, can you work one day from the home office each week?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, Wednesday is typically my day to stay home. And, you know, I might go in the morning and just make sure things are good. And, you know, before I left, I go, look, I got to do a show. I had, you know, a 10 o'clock appointment. I'll be out till 1 o'clock or 1:30. And they go, okay. Like, you know, no big deal. And that's great, you know. And then they've given me so much freedom this past year or so. It's been, you know, I think we're getting there, but we could do better, especially if we want to take that next level.
Yeah, I know for me it was I one day came in, and this is probably 5-7 years ago. I came in and I made a comment about being gone for the next week. And Emily, my service advisor, looked at me and she said, "So what?" You know, I mean, and I remember the thought to this day. I still remember that. And I looked at her and I turned around and just kind of left. And I thought about it for a little while and came back about an hour later. I said, "What did you mean by that?" She goes, "You don't do anything here anyway. Why does it matter?" And she didn't say it as a rub or anything to be, you know, to put me down. But her point was, you don't technically have a job here. You know, your job is everywhere else that you are. And that's okay.
That's great.
And that was when it clicked for me. And I went, oh, she's right. Because I had delegated everything that I did internal of the business, you know, that was a day-to-day function. And I'd done it without even thinking that I'd done it. It was one of those kicks in the behind that I realized I was spending all my time in legislative association. I was spending my time everywhere at Chamber of Commerce, Rotary. I was in every other organization but my own. And it was still running fine. And that was the day that it dawned on me that I don't have to be in this seat. Now, the only thing that really was difficult is when we as owners are in that seat, the customers are used to seeing us. And that was the most difficult part, was bridging that. And that's when you have to realize who's going to be the face of your business. You know, that was the transition for me, was figuring out who is always going to be that face of the business, because it can't be me because I'm not here enough.
So was that one of the hardest things to transist, Brian?
For me, no. I mean, in that regard, my ego didn't rely on me being there.
No, not the ego, but the feedback that your team got. You know, hey, you know, your great buddy Charlie came in, he was looking for you. And when we told him that you weren't here today, he was very sad. I just wanted to let you know, Brian, did that hit your emotional bank account at all?
For a little while, and I can remember even in that early onset, and this, I would never recommend this. I even allowed him to get my cell phone number for a while. I would never recommend that. but once I did that, it almost became crystal clear that I do care, but I don't care that much. That actually cured me. So, I mean, maybe it is a great idea. Give it away for a little while. You'll never make the mistake twice. But yeah, it tugs at your heart a little bit because you built relationships with many of the people. And even when I go back and I'm back 3 to 4 days a month, I'm still not in the shop. I might cook breakfast for them. I might cook lunch, but I'm going out to dinner with ex-customers, or not ex-customers, but customers. And I mean, they're taking me to breakfast. I mean, it's kind of like a reunion every time I go back, and you know, I plan it that way. It's really a treat. So.
And when you do go back, because you're 4 hours away, do you go back for 3 days, 4 days?
Yeah, I go back for anywhere 2 days at a time to 4 days at a time. And it just depends on what the need is. And, you know, occasionally I'll bring the whole family over, you know, like over winter break, we brought the whole family over and then stayed. I think we're there 4 days total and came back.
Hey, guys, let's do a flip on a topic right now. Every pundit in the world says EVs are here tomorrow. Maybe it's trying to change the narrative, everybody. But, you know, we know if you look inside your own business and you listen to your customer base and you see through your prism glasses the reality, guys, your predictions of the changes necessary in your business, in the marketplace, and the training that we need, you know, where are EVs going to be in your strategic planning?
They're here.
Yeah.
They're here. I mean,
little by little, I think what we're seeing is a small crawl. I think your hybrid market led the way. You know, you had Toyota that, you know, really introduced the hybrid completely. And now the EVs with Tesla, what they're doing, I think they're showing the way. I am more excited about Ford and their entries into the EV. I think they're strategy overall is fantastic, because I called a couple of my contractor friends, and one of them already ordered five Lightnings.
Didn't you buy one?
I ordered one. Yeah. I got one on order. I think what we'll see is, you know, we have some great colleagues of ours, you know, Scott Brown and Seth Thorson, who really are charging full bore ahead. And Scott shows the software side and what the capabilities of the car is doing as a motorist, from a motorist perspective. And Seth is just nuts and bolts, tearing it down, showing the technical side of things. I think what we're able to take away from that is, one, nothing to be afraid of. And two, something's going to break. So we're going to have something to fix. From the market side, the biggest barrier I see, and this is from coastal cities, because the coastal cities have the oldest infrastructure, you know, transportation wise, but living homes, houses, cities. The owner of the home who buys an EV will have to have that house retrofitted. It's going to require probably near another $10,000 to upgrade the electric, the box, position the charging unit. And if they have a garage, great. But if they don't, then it's an outside situation. So that might be a barrier to somebody, you know, and how long will that, you know, take to get rid of, to lower that barrier? So there are some headwinds. But I think overall, I think with the commercial market leading the way in the light truck market, that will bring a little bit of familiarity to everybody else. And I thought it was really unique 2 years ago when Tesla threw the gauntlet down by saying they're going to make a Cybertruck. What did Ford do? What, 2 weeks later, they came out and said, you know what, we're going to take the Mustang and make it electric to compete with Tesla. And now these two are leading the way in this new era. I personally am kind of excited about it, and I look forward to being part of that, of those solutions in the future.
Mercedes just announced 620 miles on a charge. There's so many boundaries being, first of all, you got to make something in order to improve it, right? And I do love looking at so many of these new electric car companies that are coming out and all of the new tech that they're creating, smaller, more powerful, faster, longer charge. I am going to have a Town Hall Academy on charging stations. And there is a shop owner that we all know that put in charging stations at their facility. And the guy who actually works for the company that makes the unit is going to come on along with the shop owner and someone else who's contemplating putting it in and talk about, is there any value in it, and find out a little bit more about, as you said, Greg, what do you got to do for the electric side of a facility? Brian, and you're out, you're on the West Coast, so you must see, I mean, Tesla's got to be huge out there. And have you been repairing hybrids for the last 20 years?
Yeah, I mean, it's here. It's not that this is coming. And it is here, and it's here to stay. It'd be like saying we're going to put carburetors back on our cars. I mean, that's where I go with it. And it's just, it's what we have. It's what's going to be here. And we're not going to see less electrics. We're going to see more. And the infrastructure, without a doubt, is the barrier. What that looks like, I mean, when you're talking about government mandates, as we're hearing, I have to assume that that's also going to mean that there's going to be some kind of governmental investment as well. And it just, there's no other way it can happen. That, again, just tips the hand to say, be prepared. They're coming. But at the end of the day, they still got suspension. They still got tires. They still have to stop. Things are going to break. And we're not going out of business because of the electric car any more than we did for fuel injection.
Right. Great point. That's the thing that we all have to understand, is that how many cycles of technology have we gone through? And we've all, you know, we've gone, it's coming, guys throwing the keys on the counter, walking away from the business. And before, I was thinking about this morning, was that the speed of advancement is equal to the speed of solutions with what we have today. You know, we can jump on any forum, any internet, any group, and we can find an answer to almost every problem we have technically. You know, it could change tomorrow and someone else will have an answer and put it up online. And the cat and mouse game is quick. And it gets quicker, but it's not unsolvable.
And something I think we need to think about is growing your customer base. And Greg, to your point, and Brian, to your point, they may not need the kind of work we're doing today. And we're going to be successful repairing, having the right equipment, teaching and training our people on what to do and how to do it, how to diagnose. But we're going to probably have to double the amount of customers that we do business with. And it may be through, you know, adding a branch, Greg, or saying, hey, this 5-mile radius is just around my shop, isn't it? I've got to expand out a little bit more and drag some more people in, because as electrics slowly take over. Seth was on the 700th episode, and he says, hey, listen, you guys up in the, you know, in snow country, these Teslas need brakes. He says the salt's going to kill them. You're going to have to do brake maintenance. You may not put on pads, but you're going to have to clean them up because of, you know, the regenerative braking and all that. So we have to not be afraid and seize and look for all the opportunity. And to your point, Greg, there's all kinds of forums that, you know, been there, done that. Let me teach this to you. You take this, you do this, you know, the old rip off and duplicate R&D ideas, and formulate these kinds of menu items in your shop. But if we don't tell our customers we're EV specialists, we're hybrid specialists, I think that's going to hurt, because they look at you and make an assumption that you just fix gas cars.
But look, Carm, go back in history and look at how many radiator shops used to be on every corner, how many alternator rebuilders, and it's going to be the same thing. There'll be another shrinkage of sorts, and those who are prepared for it will succeed and succeed well. Those who are not prepared for it will end up like the old radiator shop. There was a radiator shop, it seemed like every 30 miles I could find 1 to 2 radiator shops. And I'm lucky if I can find one in my Seattle area and one in the Spokane area now.
Right. Exactly. Well, that was the reason why I wanted to invest in the Lightning, is to learn the lifestyle, learn all about it, and focus on it. I mean, if you don't learn to play with it, you know, you'll never know how to really, you know, get into it and learn the nuances of it. And actually, like I said before, I said, learn the lifestyle of an EV owner, become one. And that way you become the expert around it.
You're taking off on a trip with Mama. We jump in the new Lightning, and we're going to stay at this hotel in this city. That's step one. Step two is, where's the charging station near there?
Right.
What I've been told about EV owners is that they have another planning thing to have.
They do. I mean, I just received my notification for my order is pending, or I'm in queue to get the order form. But Ford gave us a website to go to so you could start tracking your range. And when you put your destinations in, it gives you a complete route with all of the charging stations along the line. And the funniest thing was last spring or last fall, when we're going, me and a bunch of guys were going out to Pinehurst to golf. And I said, well, next time maybe I'll have a Lightning. And I made it down to Pinehurst on one tank of fuel in my current 150. And it was 359 miles, something like that. Well, Ford's range on its EV Lightning was, I think, exactly 360 miles. I said, see, guys, we'll get here with no problem. I'll have to run a dryer plug out to the condo. But, you know, but we'll get there.
This has been great. In the remaining minutes, you know, Greg, you talked about doing some travel. Brian, you're not in the business, you know, full-time. Work-life balance. Is it a real thing? And what can we do to tell the rest of the industry how to find it?
This is one of my favorite things in the whole world. I say there's no such thing as work-life balance. There's just seasons. And what season am I in? What season do I choose to be in? And that's the key, because if we try to balance everything in our life, something gives. There is a time to spend 12 hours a day in your business. There's also a time to spend two. And understanding when that season occurs really comes down to what your goals are. And anyone who says I can perfectly balance the two, I would beg to differ. You know, so I don't believe that there's a work-life balance. I just believe that we have different seasons, but we have to make and take the opportunities when they come. And to me, that's always been my personal take on it, because if you try and balance it perfectly and you say, well, I'm going to spend this many hours doing this, the first time something goes wrong, your entire calendar is blown up.
You have to manage it. Does it have to be on your calendar, Greg?
I kind of think now it does. I have to give some notification that, hey, Greg's not going to be here. I don't have the liberty yet to just say I'm not showing up. You know, and I think Brian just gave a new definition, at least for me, about how to describe work-life balance, because there are times when I'll be at the shop on a Saturday afternoon because I have to be. I want to get things done. There's nothing wrong with that if I choose to do that. And then I might take off the Monday, you know, that kind of thing. So it may not be scripted, but I think you do have to take time away to enjoy what you've worked hard for, because it gives you a different perspective. You know, sharpening the sword, that kind of thing. And so I think it's important to build that into your whatever model you want to do, whatever model you want to have for a business.
I think even more important, though, is to make sure you're scheduling the other important time, whether it's time with your wife, time with your kids, time with friends. My calendar has my personal and my professional appointments on it.
Yes,
always.
It does.
Yep. And it has to, because A, I've got three girls. And I want to spend time with those three girls. And then I've got a wife as well. So I have to make sure that I've put that on the calendar, or it gets interrupted, or I work on something else and don't jump onto it. So it really, it comes down to planning it and making sure that you know what it is you want, number one, for that given time frame, what you're really going to be working on. And whether it's family, whether it's work, just make sure that you know what you want.
I love it. Time for others is so critical to find, if you will, the seasons of balance. Brian, very clever. I like that. And Greg, you said sharpen the saw, sharpen the blade. Part of that reminds me not only giving back to the family and your significant other, the important people in your lives, including your own team, but where do you guys recharge? What do you do to re-energize? Brian?
Anytime you talk about re-energizing, for me, it's family time. You know, it's getting away with my kids, getting away, you know, it could just be a date night with my wife. That's a recharge. And even a recharge for me yesterday, I had gotten most of my 2022 plan put together, but I still had some details and I couldn't pull away from my office for some reason. And I literally took a drive in a blizzard yesterday and went to a local park, grabbed my laptop and wrote out the rest of my 2022 plan. You know, for me, those types of things always re-energize me. But I can't always do it in my office. I can't always do it in the shop. I have to get away.
Change environment. That's exactly what he said. Greg, how do you energize?
Definitely travel. The kids aren't kids any longer. They're adults, and in fact, working in the business. So the greatest time I have is for my wife and I to get in the car and take a jaunt wherever we may go and, you know, have fun, learn to be with one another, just have a great time. Golf, I love golf, and walking. And of course, I got the CEO. So those little things are what's really, really, really important to me. So that's how I recharge. It gives me the opportunity to think about what I want to do for others more than what I want to do for myself, in a sense.
Hey, guys, this was great. I learned a ton. Thanks for everyone who's been hanging out with us. We'll repurpose this as a podcast probably Sunday or Monday of this week as we work on this. Greg Buckley from Buckley's Auto Care, Wilmington, Delaware. When the president comes to Delaware, does he stop and get gas
sure,
in his car?
In, or
does he fix? Yeah, I thought so. I thought so, Greg. I know you're so damn well connected there. And Brian Kelly, Valley Auto Electric, Covington, Washington. I promise no goof up on the times next time, Brian.
Carm, thank you as always.
Hey, guys, thanks so much for being here. Appreciate
thanks.
It so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.